podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hi there, I'm Brian Abana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Podcast.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to this week's Mall Over Podcast, the only local podcast gives you the news, views, and opinions on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter, we are at Mall Over Podcast. We are Mall Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook, and you can find all of our podcasts and content on Anchor and Apple Podcasts and lots of other podcast repositories. You might remember us from such content such as Jacko Piper's Sex Whistle, Dave Ribbons' Rave Ribbons, and Rynak's Wine Racks. I mean, that's what we're famed for, right? That's the sort of shit that we really, you know, we hang our hat on. And most recently, you know, I feel like the podcast has been drifting along in a shit show of lackluster rugby, which is nearly coming to an end. So, you know, let's move on. I'm joined this evening by the nicest man in Cornish rugby podcasting that lives just outside of Newquay in a place near Goonhaven. That's Ben Eustace.
Well, I very much live in a place that is Goonhaven.
So I was trying to be generic as well as extremely specific. But you're actually physically in Goonhaven. I thought you were just on the periphery.
I'd say we were on the, I'd call it New Goonhaven.
No, it's very posh.
Yeah. It's the other side of the garden centre, if that means anything to anybody that's listening.
Love that. Love that.
Yeah. The other side of the garden centre.
Yeah.
Pretty much everywhere in Cornwall.
Yeah, not a euphemism, that, either.
Well, yeah.
Good old Phil Elkins, he's the other side of the garden centre.
Oh, yeah, well, you can talk about him, because he's not here. He was planning on being here, the housewife's favourite. But unfortunately, his significant other has been called out to some kind of equine emergency. I think she's going to shut the gate after the horse has bolted. But we'll see what happens. And also, our resident sports videographer and all-round great guy who's here to talk all things.
I'm not a videographer. Students are videographers, mate.
What are you then, mate?
I'm a professional cameraman.
Okay. Sports cameraman, all-round great guy, newly self-proclaimed king of Hunt Stanton Golf Club, wherever he plays. Doug Andrews, Chinese Lensman. How you doing, mate?
Keeping it real, mate. Keeping it real.
So, as I said in the intro, we tried to record. Was it 2 weeks ago? We tried to do a record, and it was made quite significant, obviously, that it was that shit that we decided not to put it out. I'm going to endeavour for that not to happen tonight. And even if it quite probably will be shit, at least we'll have some energy about it. Are you guys all right with that?
I'm all right with that. I can't imagine it was as bad as we were making it out. But, I mean, if you're saying it was, then it must have been.
I mean, you know, for me, and I'm a bit of a...
I know you're a perfectionist, Russ, so, you know.
Yeah, absolutely a perfectionist. And, you know, I like things to be just the way they are.
Perfect.
Perfect. All the irony. So the Premiership season is all done and dusted, thankfully. Finally. It feels like it's been going on forever.
It's not, is it?
It's not, is it?
Well, no, you're right. It's not. Should we get into that now before we start talking about all the other stuff? Should we just talk about that first? Because it affects your team, Doug, you know, more than anybody else's. And I know you're, you know, getting rapidly towards apathy with the Northampton Saints. However, you know,
good result for us, really.
20-0.
Recent results.
Yeah. So I've seen a few interviews on BT Sport and different bits and pieces with different people. And the whole thing with Northampton is that they couldn't compile a squad based on their game against Sale in the Premiership Cup final the other week. they could then not field a squad because a large number of their players were isolating. They asked for dispensation from Prem Rugby and they talked about all sorts of other stuff about getting players in on loan, none of which was possible. So they had to forfeit the game, which is kind of contradictory to what Prem Rugby have said, because they said that Northampton didn't try and get anybody in on loan. What, you know, a shit show is probably a fair summation of it, isn't it?
Yeah. But what evidence are you going off to suggest that it would have been anything else ever?
No, true story.
Saints finally gave in and actually decided that they weren't going to pretend anymore, and that they are, once they lost that European semi-final, literally just mailing it in. If you, I reckon if you'd have given the opportunity to have qualified for the quarterfinals of the European Cup, but lost every Premiership game 20-0, knowing that they weren't going to finish below 8th, they'd have taken it. They'd have probably snapped your hand off, because at least none of their props would be injured.
I think most Premiership teams would, wouldn't they? For guaranteed Champions Cup rugby next season?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, you know, they finished in 7th, so even handing Gloucester that win, they knew that they were going to be.
Yeah, it's cost them nothing. I don't think. I don't think Worcester can catch us, can they?
Worcester can't. The points difference is quite significant for Worcester. I think they've got, Worcester are 4 points behind Gloucester, so with a 5-point win potentially. So if Sale decide tomorrow, when all these tests come back, that they cannot field a squad and have to mail it in, then Worcester will qualify in with a 5-point win and a 20-0 victory. But also that would mean Bath finish up in the top four. Where I find it really, really hard to believe is I listened to Phil Winstanley on Rugby Tonight, and I listened to Steve Diamond, who... Well, that's another story. Who they would say, oh, you know, all we've done is taken advice from Public Health England. I didn't know what the testing protocol was in the Premiership specifically, but apparently they had a test on the Thursday before their Saturday, on the Thursday after a midweek match. They then played, it was then 6 days until they played Northampton in the cup. But after that test, after that Thursday test, they had no positives apparently. And then what, they recorded one false negative, or they were told that one of the tests that came back negative was actually a positive. So when that came back, they did all the isolation, they did everything that needed to be done and the track and trace and stuff, but they still think that
what they need is two positives, one to cancel out the negative.
But then they went on, because they had enough players and all the negative tests, to play Northampton. And then the following round of testing, which was the following Thursday, was when they had 16 then positive tests, but they could still field a full squad of 23. Apparently it was Worcester and Public Health England that were reticent to play the game, which doesn't make any sense to me, considering both teams have stuff to play for. And even more so now, with Northampton and Gloucester being cancelled.
What do Worcester have to play for?
Well, Worcester can finish 8th.
Can they? Russ, didn't you? The key part of that whole story was Public Health England didn't want them to play.
Yeah, so then it should have just been cancelled.
Exactly, yeah. I mean,
and Premiership Rugby should have taken it out of the hands of the clubs and said...
I mean, I thought that it was all pretty much set in stone that if a club had a certain amount of positives, they had to cancel the game anyway.
Well, this is the loophole they're using to get out of it, which is they're saying, well, Sale declared that they could safely play the game with a squad of 23. But they never actually named their squad. They didn't name that squad with academy players and Dorian West propping. they just said, we can safely play this game. It's Worcester's choice not to risk it. So that, to me, it screams more about Sale not necessarily playing by the rules than when everybody else does. And the whole thing about the squad naming at the same time and would have given other teams an unfair advantage. And, you know, as it transpires, you know, Bath are now in a position where, depending on what Sale do, no one can prepare for the Premiership. No one can prepare for the game against Exeter at Sandy Park next week because nobody knows what's going on with Sale.
I mean, the larger point is that it doesn't matter who plays at Sandy Park that week. They're going to get their arses ripped.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But that's the thing. If Sale do decide, if Sale get the win, their first team squad or the players that were due to play on Wednesday against Worcester would have to be the same players that played against Exeter, because all of the other players that tested positive would be in isolation, wouldn't they? They wouldn't be able to play.
Yeah.
So if it is a team of academies and a sprinkling of others, then that really is a team that's going to get their absolutely welted at Sandy Park.
It's just a farce, isn't it?
I mean, I got to say, I took hardly any notice of this because I'm just a bit sick of it. It's like with every issue now, everyone just has to complain. So it doesn't matter what it is in rugby. People complain and take a side based on their team. And I can see it if it's such an on-pitch incident, I can see it. But people are now basing their views on an epidemic based on which rugby team they support.
Ben, it's a pandemic.
You say pandemic, I say epidemic. but, you know, you had Sale fans saying, oh, you know, who are you to deny these players their dream and stuff like that? And it's like, well, you know.
Is their dream to get dry bummed by Exeter at Sandy Park on a Thursday night?
While they've got a sore throat. It's just... And, you know, I just think this is exactly where this season was always going to end. They would have been better off just finishing it at the point where the season finished. And the next time, you know, and if you wanted to take this player welfare route that we hear so much about, this would have been a golden opportunity to give all of those players 12 months off. And so the next time someone is banging on about a high tackle and player welfare, I just don't want to hear it because, you know, they could have given them 6 to 12 months off.
But where's the player welfare where they're all, where they're rusty and they can't play?
Cameraman welfare, yeah, that's
videographer welfare.
Yeah. Hey, mate, the tennis is still going on.
Yeah.
Oh, but sadly, the women's cricket is finished.
Do you know, there was a thing on Facebook the other day and it says something like outstanding from whoever the bowler was. And it was a spin bowler and she bowled 3 balls that went straight on. And the West Indian batters just missed every single one. They just swiped through across the line and missed them all. Not one of them span. 3 wickets. Outstanding.
Yeah. Outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. One of the thing that was going around when I got there was that there was a ball bowled in the second T20 that was clocked at 38 miles an hour, which I think is pretty much impossible to make bounce, isn't it? That's like...
That must have been the epitome of a moon ball. That must have gone at least 40 foot in the air for it to reach the batsman on the full. Anyway, right, rugby.
Well, let's be honest. All this would be a pretty much a moot point if
Cal's opinion.
I can't see that.
Sorry, Doug. Just pouring a boon of having.
It would have pretty much been a moot point if Bath had turned up for the last 20 minutes.
Saracens were always going to do something to ruin someone's day, weren't they? That's their MO.
So what we're saying is it's pretty much Saracen's fault that we're in this position we're in now. Because if Bath had won the game, everything would have been put to bed.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And to be fair, Bath started really well, but...
Yeah. I mean, you've segued nicely into that, Ben. Well, let's talk about Bath.
That was the idea. Yeah, I mean...
Let's get off the controversial stuff.
I mean, they wet the bed, didn't they, basically? And Saracens, well, Doug's right, aren't they? They wanted to spoil the party. And as soon as they scored to make it 17-10, I think that was inevitable that was going to happen. I think it's almost, I'm not even that disappointed, because I think that would be quite good ammunition for Bath next season. Just look back at that game and learn from it and use it as a motivation. And we might as well win something in a season that counts, to be quite honest. I think they've got the basis of a good side there. I think Hooper's
solid,
kind of Hooper's built it in his own image a little bit, but
whoa. That's English for stop a horse. What exactly has Hooper built?
I think he's built a side that's solid up front.
So who's he brought in?
Well, they've brought in quite a lot of that front row, haven't they? Stewart, Boyce, Judge. You've brought in McNally, Stook.
Hooper didn't bring
Stook. I think Stook was there before that.
Not been there that long, has he? He was at Gloucester before, wasn't he?
I'd argue that he hasn't really brought anyone in. He's just reaping the benefits of having a fit squad.
I mean, that's true as well. And yet they've brought some good youngsters through and bought some good youngsters as well. So
let's Ben Spencer has
a signing
pretty much single-handedly revolutionised Bath as an organised force.
Yeah.
And he seems to be now getting the best out of Rhys Priestland as well.
Yeah. I mean
they've got it's the first time they've had a competent scrum half since that season where Fatu Ali was Chris Cook's a car crash.
Yeah.
Who else did they have?
They had Chudley.
Oh yeah, Chudley's 400.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Spencer's box kicking is amazing, but
I just think Spencer in general is very good.
Yeah, he's not just the box kicking.
Box kicking's bound to be amazing because that's all they do at Saracens.
Oh, exactly.
It's like those little Sabutio corner takers. You just push their head and they box kick.
Richard Wigglesworth, the most predictable scrub half in the history of the game.
Yeah.
I think they've got the basis of something there, and I think next season they're definitely going to be in with a shout. But they need to learn how to close out a game, and Saracens know how to do that. It was a shame, but I'm not too cut up about it. I mean, Wasps have been brilliant since the comeback. Exeter, obviously best team in the league, probably, if you discount the relegated team.
As an Exeter fan, I don't think there is any even with Saracens at full strength, I think it's touch and go. I think as a team, Exeter are better than Saracens. Saracens have a group of far better individuals, but I think like over the last season, Exeter are probably better in general.
Let's ask the more important question though. What's more racist? The team name Saracens or the logo of Exeter?
Ooh. But we're not allowed to talk about Saracens.
Can we put a poll up on Twitter about that?
What's more racist? What do people hate more, Saracens or the Exeter logo?
Are we going to?
Is it the origin of the word Saracen?
That's the one.
Are we going to get back into like the Shrewsbury SS and the that came up a few weeks ago? Gloucester Gestapo.
Yeah. That was very good.
Yes. Was that from the Lost Pod?
No, that was a few weeks ago. It's when we were talking about the Crusaders.
Oh yeah.
Because that's arguably the worst of the lot.
That's true. I mean, which rugby team would go on to dominate the world? I mean, the Gloucester Gestapo would certainly do it in a fairly non-traditional way.
I still think, person for person, the Ba'ath Party committed more atrocities.
The Scarlets could change their name to the Khmer Rouge, couldn't they?
I'm trying to shoehorn the Viet Cong in here somewhere, but I'm gonna have to think about it.
There's got to be some Cornish team down there, and they with a Cong in their name.
Well, if not, I can make one.
Yeah, do
the Vior Viet Cong.
The Vior Cong.
That is amazing. I mean,
to be fair, the pirates. I mean,
their friendliness, were they, pirates?
No, floating rapists, as I once heard them described as.
Oh, this is better. This is why people come to them all over.
Yeah,
floating
the
pirates.
Floating pirates. Amazing. Back to some kind of rugby. I just keep thinking of floating rapists. I mean, can we use that as a title for the pod? I don't know.
Probably not.
But the draw against Saracens actually puts Ba'ath 3 points ahead of Sale. So, if Sale need to win on Wednesday, I don't think with Worcester being able to catch. Oh no, they can't, can they? I thought they could, but they can't. They could catch Northampton, but they need like a 100-point swing. That's right. Because I'm looking at
doesn't it? Like, who've Sale got? If they all suddenly don't have COVID, then they're going to win, aren't they? But they could still be putting out Steve Diamond's auntie yet.
I was still looking at a table that didn't have the 20-point Gloucester win on it. So yeah, it's very difficult. Northampton have got minus 109 points difference, and Worcester have got minus 200. So a 5-point victory with a 90-point swing would just about do it. So feasibly, Worcester could just go, well, it doesn't mean anything, we're not going to do that. They could mail it in, which would mean curtains for Ba'ath. But equally, if I was Worcester and, you know, Sale could put a team out with clear COVID tests, then I would do it and just go and smash them to pieces anyway. But then they got to travel to Manchester and, you know, hotbed of COVID and all that sort of stuff. You can understand why they wouldn't in current climate, but, you know, it's frustrating. It would be frustrating for, if you were a Ba'ath player, supporter, having worked so hard at the weekend, even to get a draw against Saracens when nobody really fancied them, to then miss out because that last game was basically just handed to Sale on a plate. The other team you mentioned, Ben, whilst we were talking about rugby there, is Wasps. Their run-in, or their sort of restart, has been better than anyone's. Change of coaching, obviously, all the best. And Liv Fast left just middle of the season-ish before COVID. Wasps kind of looked down and out. They were rudderless. They didn't have any. They didn't seem to have any fight or bite or anything about them. But since those coaching changes came in, they've been almost unstoppable. And obviously they beat Exeter 45 or 46-5 at the weekend. Not Exeter's full team, but you know, all the while they booked themselves a home semi-final. Doug, since the restart, have you watched much of Wasps? They seem to have been putting it right in every game. Have you worked much at the Rico or seen much of Wasps?
I've done a few Wasp games, yeah. I think they were suffering a bit from what Saints suffered with at the end of Malander. But unlike Saints, they cut the cord quick and got somebody in who just seems to have freed them up a bit. Maybe some new ideas, maybe other teams to find them, you know, slightly more difficult to read. Fekitoa playing all right, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's taken a while to get going at Wasps, isn't he? But he now looks like the player that they, you know, they thought they were signing 18 months ago, 2 years ago, whenever he came in.
Yeah, yeah. And they've benefited from the same thing that Bath benefited from, in that they never seem to have all of their good players fit at the same time. So I think it's benefited them in terms of actually having some very good players available all at once. And then they've been able to supplement that with quality players from the academy, Barbarian, you know, the
Willis brothers.
And kept together the core of the side, really. So I don't think it's particularly hard to work out that if you wrote down the squads at the start of the season and said, which ones of these teams do you think are going to be towards the top at the end, you'd probably pick the five or six that are there, because primarily they're the ones with the money to buy the players in. And funnily enough, all their players have been fit all season because they've had no games. So it doesn't surprise me at all, really.
Jacob Emanga's looked very good, isn't he? There's been some
I don't know about this Jacob. I'm not buying him. I saw him play for the under 23s. What is it? I can't remember what it is in rugby. Under 20s, isn't it? England under 20s. And I'm just not sold on him. I think he's benefited since the restart from playing against a lot of crap.
I think Jimmy Gopoff is absolutely pulling the strings in that team, isn't he?
I think so. But also he's got Fekitoa. Who else is there in the backs?
Minotsi.
He's got really, really good players around him and a really good pack of forwards.
When your pack is dominating at the level of what the Wasps has been dominating at, because they are turning over ball left, right and centre from the Willis brothers and Brad Shields.
Getting a huge amount of turnovers, and you've got Robson who keeps the defence tucked in.
You know, and that's what Saints have found, because you know, we've lost that scrum half that teams are scared of, and all of a sudden Dan Bigger doesn't look as good. And we're not running the ball from 70 metres every time we get it. And I think with players like Umanga and Marcus Smith, they look unbelievable when the going's good. But as soon as there is a little bit of resistance, they become ordinary. And that's why I think neither of them have really made an imprint or even threatened George Ford, because I'm not sure Jones trusts them to be able to control a game when they're not right on top.
And that's been a critic, almost a semi-criticism of George Ford in the past as well, isn't it? Where he has looked shaky, and he's got a lot better at it, especially when Farrell's played outside him, at managing those game situations when the pack isn't dominant. And if you've got those young fly halves that everybody's talking about, your Marcus Smiths and your Umangas, and it pisses me off quite considerably that people don't talk about Joe Simmons in that sort of breath.
But then again, that could be the similar sort of situation.
For a system. But then from an England perspective, I see someone like Joe Simmons as very sort of Owen Farrell-esque in his play, a game manager. someone who reads situations as opposed to an opportunist like Smith or Umanga, for instance. And I just think, you know, when people are talking about young fly halves, there is a lot of talk about Marcus Smith this, Marcus Smith that, you know, and no, it literally seems like nobody even considers Joe Simmons one bit. I just find it odd.
Well, let's wait and see if he's involved in these Orton games, because I wouldn't be surprised if he is. But then Eddie never really, you're never going to find out why, if he hasn't been picked, that he hasn't been picked. To me, it would make sense to him and Slade. I know they're
absolutely
not, you know, they're not going to be playing next to each other, but that would seem to make sense to me, especially if, well, I don't know, if they pick Simmons at eight as well, with however many extra players there are in the pack. If I don't know, he just doesn't. I think Jones sees Exeter as a purely system-based team. That's why I don't think that the squad's completely full of their players. I think he picks Slade because he's probably their most naturally talented player. But outside of that, I think he thinks they're completely system-based, and I don't think he rates a lot of those players.
Yeah, which is an entirely fair comment.
Unbelievable, because all of the Saracens players are system players. Nick Azikwe's not exactly done much for Saints since he went there.
Yeah, true.
I think Slade does stand out when you watch Exeter, just in that he's, I don't want to say class, because all of Exeter's players have got class, but he's got that sort of ease that the very best players have,
yeah,
which I wouldn't say that all of them do. I think Simmons was brilliant in the semi-final, but then most of the Exeter team was, once they tired the French out, they really got on top and played really well, and it was interesting that Baxter did tell them, they would tell the commentary team they were going to do that after about 25 minutes.
Well, it's not rocket science when you see the way that most French sides have operated in the last 20 years. They pick a big old pack, and then, I mean, how many you can watch.
It took a bit of confidence to say that on live TV.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
You know, even if that was the plan, because they were getting, they were second best at the time.
At the time they spoke to Baxter, they were right under the cosh. And they were a couple of missed tackle here or there away from almost being out of sight.
Yeah, and I've digressed a little bit from what I was trying to say, but I think when you watch Exeter, he stands out as the sort of classiest player in terms of style. I think Simmons can't do much more, and it'll be just up to whether Eddie likes the look of him or not. But I don't think on the England front, there's much need to make too many changes. I mean, that side got to a World Cup final. So, you know, Ford and Farrell are both still in their 20s. So I don't think there's three spots. I think it is going to be a sort of fight for one spot with those three young players. And personally, I'd go for Simmons at the moment.
And maybe it's a style thing that, you know, if they're going to have a number 22 on the bench, or the number 23, the utility back, would be someone like Simmons who could potentially slot into fullback, for instance. Or, you know, and it gives you a little bit more flexibility. I don't know, but
I mean, I didn't want to
make this about Joe Simmons because.
I think it's a valid discussion. I think my only thing with Simmons is I think he's pretty much cell for cell a carbon copy of George Ford, really. I don't think there's any magic about him. I think he's just a very functional, move your team around the pitch kind of player. Yeah. And if you want something different from Ford, then you go for a Smith or a Umanga who maybe have a little bit of that sort of maverick about them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would put Simmons as a a direct, if you had Ford and Farrell at opposite ends of a scale, I would put Simmons right in the middle of that.
Really?
Yeah. I think his game management, I think his goal kicking, I think his defensive ability, I think he's got the ability to pick gaps and run the ball, as he's shown many times. But I also think he knows when to kick, like, very much, you know. Here's the thing, I think he is the reason, not solely, but a large part of the reason that Exeter have kicked on another level than what they had with Gareth Steenson. Gareth Steenson was an exceptional game manager, an exceptional goal kicker, but he was never, ever, ever the most dynamic fly half. He was a shipper.
He was also a bit of a swinging gate in defence, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But now, but the way Simmons plays, I think that he is a large part of the reason why Exeter have kicked on.
Yeah, I think he's a large part of the reason. I think also you've got Hogg at fullback, which is
amazing. Johnny
different gravy to what you had before. And Johnny Gray is to a degree, but I think the fact that Johnny Hill has really cracked on. I think they always had very functional second rows at Exeter, and I think he's now he's probably gonna be in the England squad, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, not this one that's been announced today, but
I mean, who really who
yeah, but Russ, that's the squad for the Barbarians fixture, isn't it?
Yeah. The one of the funnier things I've seen today is on two separate fan sites. You know, I told you I joined a lot of the fan sites to share the podcast when I've really cared about who was listening. And I've seen on two separate of those fan sites today, oh, I can't believe this England, like, genuine post. I can't believe this England squad. There are no of these teams. And there are, and another post was, why is there none of our players? And I'm like, you fucking stupid. Like, honestly, retarded at best.
I mean, they probably are, yeah.
I'm surprised, you know, some of the call-ups of players that, you know, you wouldn't have thought, but it's a training squad. Like, literally, who cares?
Yeah, it is genuinely. Eddie Jones has been watching a game, probably on telly. He's seen a player have a good half and he thought, I'll have a look at him. I'll see what his character's like. That's all it is.
I mean, I'm a big fan of the rave ribbons getting involved. I thought he was a big saffer. Pugwall?
Yeah. Nobody's going to tell him what to do.
Great reference. Yeah, Dave Ribbons, rave ribbons. I thought he was a big South African, didn't he?
Well, the business struggled during lockdown, mate. No one was raving, so he's had to go back to rugby, and England's his only option now.
Well, I suppose he can't travel, can he, due to COVID?
Exactly.
So now he's after pledge his allegiance. absolute utter nonsense. Is there anybody in the training squad that nobody cares about, Ben, that's caught your eye a little bit? I'm hoping you're looking at it right now.
I am. I'm looking at it. Not really. I mean, Thorley and Dombrandt, people are hoping they'll be in the main squad. Joe Marchant's in there, isn't he? But other than that, it's a lot of bit part players, isn't it? I mean, there's a sentence in the report I'm looking at where it's like player A and player B have been preferred to the more established player C. And I don't think any of the A, B or C start for their clubs, you know? So he's just having a look at a few players, isn't he? I think Thorley to me is an Eddie Jones kind of player. Dombrandt, I'm not so sure is, although I've been impressed by what I've seen of Dombrandt. Other than that, it's the Saracens guys and a lot of youngsters, really.
Yeah, I mean, I always like these squads to, you know, it's always fun to go through and say, find the player that you have absolutely no idea existed.
I do not know who Ali Crossdale is.
Exactly, yeah. And it's always
isn't he a Saracens player?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
But it's always fun.
Good luck to him, by the way.
Yeah, it's always fun. And Jack Clement, wouldn't know him if he shat in my mouth.
But you'd surely know him afterwards.
Yeah. And it's always fun to watch people lose their shit about Piers Francis being in the squad, even though he's probably Saints' best back for the last year and a half to 2 years. Like you said, there's Jack Singleton. I'm out on Jack Singleton as well, to be fair.
I mean, when you take out, what is it, six or five clubs?
Well, basically half the Premiership, nearly.
Yeah. You know, going to be struggling a little bit there for a huge amount of...
good players?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say interest from the general public. I just hate the general public.
But, it's basically a stash collection exercise, isn't it?
Yeah.
Come and collect your kit bag. Come and collect your embossed kit bag.
Look, man, I've got an England kit bag. It don't count, Ali.
I must admit, I like Dingwall. I think Dingwall's a good player. See how they all get on.
That's the end of that then. England discussion.
Have we lost our energy by any chance?
No.
I'm just musing over, you know, is there some kind of agreement between Umbro and Eddie Jones to bang out as much of this stash into the general populace as they possibly can?
I'll pick a 30-man squad.
I mean, the next squad's going to be like 120 man. Fuck it, we'll just give everyone a stash bag.
just every English eligible player
First 30 through the door can play.
Regardless of position.
You're in the squad, but the proviso is every time you're on TV for the next season, you've just got to keep walking behind the camera. Just in a circle. Just keep walking past.
First 30 through the door at Penny Hill Park. Yeah. You know, get to fight for 23 spots in the matchday squad.
Fucking Haskell would be the first one there, wouldn't he?
Have you heard? He was on Soccer AM the other day, which, yes, is still going.
Put away 1,000 women.
He reckons so.
And he's been in a relationship with that Chloe Madeley for what? Six years? Right, so that makes him. How old is he now?
35, is he? 36?
35, so 29. So he started putting women away at what? 17?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's nearly 100 a year.
One every
3 days.
3.5 days.
Yeah. Prolific. Considering he plays rugby on one of those days.
Yeah. You know, church on one of the others.
Yeah. And don't forget he's got to do his 8 gym sessions a day. And he's got to write books about cooking and all that kind of stuff. So
it's an interesting claim, isn't it? I mean,
I'm calling bullshit on you, Haskell.
Anybody that's claimed to, you know, have bedded X amount of women, anybody that puts a number on the amount of people they've slept with is clearly times it by 10.
So 10
minutes, yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
well played.
The trouble he had counting Italians in malls might figures might not be his strong point.
There's at least 400 people in that mall, sir.
which by proxy makes it a mall. And in the same week that James Haskell brings out a book, another one of our favourites, Joe Marler, also brought out a book. Surprised, you know.
Rather read Mein Kampf while getting anally bleached.
It's very Nazi heavy this week, isn't it?
is that another possible title, Nazi heavy? Oh, my word. Right.
Just bet he comes across as such a nice guy.
Struggles, doesn't he? Struggles. Got struggles.
Keep hearing good things about Dylan Hartley's book, though. Might have to have a look at that.
Yeah, but you love him, so I don't read.
All right, it's a thing. Don't
worry about it. No one looks surprised today.
Zach couldn't, just said a don't. Doug, you were at the Stoop yesterday. Is this because the London Irish contract has run out at the Reading ground?
It is.
The Medeski. And they're not yet allowed to play at Brentford because I guess they've only just opened that stadium.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of crossover.
Well,
so
at least it doesn't start until next season.
Oh, right. Okay. So they playing at the Stoop. Oh, next season, as in.
Yeah.
As middle in of next, November.
Yeah. Next month.
Okay. So, but obviously you were there yesterday for London Irish versus Bristol in a game that kind of didn't really mean anything. Bristol were always going to put it away. But let's talk about
James Haskell.
He was always going to put it away. but let's talk a little bit about a particular incident during that game, and an interpretation, or, you know, is it an interpretation of the advantage law, or because it seems to happen a lot, like Exeter down in the red zone or any team down in the red zone get a penalty, and it's basically you either, one of three things happen. A team either scores a try on their own merit, therefore advantage is gained regardless of length of time. They get a penalty try because there are continued infringements, and you know, an infringement occurs that leads to, or would have led to, a try, like a deliberate knock-on or whatever, which means a player would be penalised, and then there's a yellow card or whatever. Or they just keep going round and round and round in some kind of death spiral of penalty advantage after penalty advantage after penalty advantage, until the team giving away the penalties get so many people yellow carded, there is literally no defenders left.
Yeah.
And a prime example of that happened at the Stoop.
Yeah, so Max Malin's, Bristol were playing under advantage for offside, I think it was. And Max Malin's broke the line and went in under the post and basically dropped the ball out of play. And then Carl Dixon called the play back for the penalty. My argument would be that you've been given the advantage, you're over the try line, it's not my fault you've got dick fingers and you drop the ball. All you had to do was put it down. There is no more, like, that is an advantage. You are over the try line. If you're given a penalty and you miss the kick, you don't get to take it again because you didn't get any points. The advantage was there. Put the ball down, you score a try. There's no one near him. It just, in the world we live in at the moment, where everything is analysed and scrutinised and everything's got to be by the book, the penalty advantage law is the single most weirdly officiated and under-questioned rule in any sport I know. It's just an arbitrary amount of time. I've seen penalty advantages where a team make a 15-metre break and that's it, advantage over. I've seen penalty advantages that go on for 5 minutes, result in two yellow cards, and then they kick 3 points. There needs, in my opinion, to be some sort of phase limit or yardage limit or something put on it, because for me, it ruins games. Just this constant, when you're 5 metres out, offside, but you know, if there's more than two or three phases, there's going to be an offside penalty.
It's not
write down somewhere what constitutes an advantage, because for me, being over the try line is an advantage. It's not my fault if you can't put the ball down.
It's not even just in the red zone, is it? Because how often do you see teams break the line? They're on a penalty advantage. They break the line. They go 30-odd metres down the field through broken field. So they make a break through the gap. They're now in open field. They get someone gets tackled by a fullback, for instance, and then it gets knocked on and the referee goes back for the advantage 30 metres back down the pitch. Yeah. Now, just but because
yesterday, Carl Dixon called a knock-on advantage over, and then Bristol immediately knocked the ball on, and he went, "Oh, I called it over too early. Come on, you can have your scrum back here."
Wow.
Which I've never seen that before.
I mean, he's a nice guy, Carl Dixon, and I don't want to belittle him, but that's fucking shambles, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's shambles level officiating. Oh, well, you know, I called it over to. If you called it over, mate, you called it over. That's it. It's all about that. And if you hold your hands up and say, "I did call it over too early, but I called it over, so whatever. I'm owning this. It's London Irish scrum. It's all about that, lads. My mistake. We own it. We go again."
Yeah.
You don't turn around. Imagine it. Just it loses all of its kind of authority, and you just think, well, what's the point? You know, you lose confidence in a referee. I mean, at that
to
point,
me,
don't you?
To me, knock-on advantage should be two phases, and penalty advantage should be at most three, four phases. But that may lead to more cynicism from defences in the red zone. But then just kick the penalty the first time you get a penalty. You know, Ben's eerily quiet about all this.
I basically agree. I think sometimes these advantages do go on far too long, and it's almost a dead zone in the game, isn't it? Because, you know, it's going to come back unless something happens. And
it's like with Exeter, you know, if as soon as they're driving more, if the mall collapses, they'll just get another penalty, and it'll just be penalty, 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 penalty until they score. And you just hope that there's no yellow cards before they score, because then it's just more of the same.
I think that it does need to be quantified how much advantage, whether it's in time or whether it's in yardage or what it is. It's difficult because, like you say, it will. If you get it wrong, you know all the time with these laws in rugby, you get an unintended consequence. So, you know, if you said, you know, you've got 90 seconds of advantage, just for the sake of argument.
Yeah, and at the end of that 90 seconds, if you haven't got to a period, if you haven't gained a significant advantage in those 90 seconds, then the referee would just blow the whistle. Or if you made it a phase, so you've got five phases, right? From this advantage, you've got five phases. So if you're picking and going, for instance, on the try line, you've got five phases to go over the try line. If you don't go over the try line, I'm blowing the whistle for a penalty.
I think that's the best way, because at least on the pick and go option, it would create an end point. But I do wonder if you'd get players then just chucking the ball on the floor after the fourth phase or the 84th second.
Yeah,
or something.
But it wouldn't matter, because if after that fifth phase they know they're going to get the penalty anyway, because the referee will just, if you've not gained your significant advantage, you just get the penalty. The referee blows the whistle, get the penalty. So it stops that continuous, just the same over and over, like 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes. It just, so actually five phases, if you think about it, but let's say the ball's in the ruck for 15 seconds by the time it gets back and they've said use it. So that's a minute. So you've got a minute to get over the try. If you're in the red zone, for instance, you've got a minute to get over the try line, or I'm burning the penalty. You can then still tap and go and start the whole process again if you wish, or kick to the corner, or give you points. But what I'm not going to do is just go round and round and round, especially in the red zone, just going like on the try line, batter it, batter it, batter it. Because it's just, it's not good to watch, is it? And it's also not, you know, it's not helpful, I don't think, for the game.
It seemed to me, and far be it from me to criticise or question anything like this, but there was a lot of pro-Bristol stuff going on in that game. They needed a bonus point, and let's just say they were given every opportunity to do that.
Interesting. I mean, say no more. It was on television. Everybody that wanted to watch it would have got to watch it. So, and a lot of those people primarily would have been Bristol fans.
But I mean, you know, it's almost certainly bullshit. But it there was a lot of. I mean, Bristol scored two pushover tries in the last 5 minutes. So, you know, you got to get in position to do that, right?
Yeah. I was going to say earlier,
and I'm not just doing this to avoid accusations of bias, but I think on the balance of the season, it's good that Bristol have made it, because they've been like probably the story of the season. You know, they're very rarely out the news, and that might be because some of their fans don't shut up. But
plucky underdog billionaire run rugby.
Yeah, but you know, they've gone for it. They made some exciting signings, and they have, you know, entertained all the way through. So, you know, good for them for making it. But yeah, you know, I didn't see the game, so I'm not going to comment on that. But
that's decent from a Bath fan, that, Ben.
Well, you know,
real nice.
Got to get my reputation from somewhere, haven't I?
The nice.
That was for Lloyd, really.
Let's move on. Oh, can you still hear me?
Yeah, you just flipped out for a bit.
Okay, so we've been going for 55 minutes. Let's wrap into some any other business. Ben.
I don't really have any, I've got to say. Premiership.
Okay then, mate. Okay.
Premiership rugby could have done the app just as well as the government have, but other than that, nah, I'm good.
Nice one. Doug.
I'm trying to keep things positive because of how last week went, or the week before, or whenever it was.
Mate, any other business can be whatever. It's already been 100 times more positive. You know, we mentioned floating rapists and the Vior Kong. So, you know, that's a weird as far as I can tell.
If anyone from Vior does listen, can you at least consider that for a Sevens name? Please.
Please.
The Vior Kong Sevens.
We could have gone with Charlie Quinn's, couldn't we?
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. Have I got any other business? Do you know what, Russ? For once, no, really. I think life's just ticking along at the moment. It's not too shabby. I've got nothing really to complain about. I wish that divorces were easier to sort out. Other than that, no, life's pretty good, mate.
I can't imagine you're the only person in the country that thinks that, mate.
Welcome to the Marriage Over podcast.
Certainly isn't the long marriage podcast.
And she won't let me see the children, Fernando Innes.
literally.
Oh, fucking hell. Yeah, well, I suppose with that in mind, I haven't really got anything to say either. I was going to mock Donald Trump and the presidential debates that were fucking... I don't know if either of you saw that utter shit show that was, you know... The only way that presidential debate could get any worse is if it were promoted by Eddie Hearn.
That would be amazing.
Can you imagine Eddie Hearn promoting
Matchroom Towers
promoting a presidential debate, just the two of them, or you know, like either as a proper promotional press conference where they do like the square up afterwards.
Remember Mallet's Mallet?
Yeah, very good. Or they do it in a Johnny Nelson like. Behind the ropes style, you know, where they just sit a bit like Smith and Jones-esque, where they just sit across at a table in a dark room. And they have to go, you know what? When it gets to it, and we're stood in the ring, and I'm facing you down, I am going to smash your face in. And you won't even see it coming, because I'll be too quick, and it'll be lights out. And I just imagine Biden and Trump, two old men that have forgotten what they've said not 7 seconds before, just talking over each other and at each other in an absolute hot mess of old sweaty man.
I think the best way to decide that election will be to feed them both 3 pints of water and see who lasts the longest before they piss themselves. Loser leaves town.
That's not a bad shout. You know, who's got the worst hairdo?
I'm going to shock you.
But I like wine.
I like Joe Biden. And I don't like Trump. So I think, now don't get me wrong, I don't hope he dies, but if anyone was gonna catch COVID, it was Trump, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because it fucking stinks though, doesn't it? Do you not think it stinks of, look at me guys, I've caught COVID, I've beat COVID, and now I'm bouncing back.
I just think because he decided it wasn't macho to not get COVID, he's just been asking for it for about 3 months now, and because they've all caught it, haven't they? All like his all his advisors and the entourage and all that. So I think that witch that does the press conferences has got it now. So it's a funny old situation, isn't it? But I'm not feeling too sorry for him, put it that way.
No, agree. I mean, I can't see that Joe Biden is the most dynamic president that America are ever going to have. But you know, on the other hand, he's not Donald Trump, is he? Mm. So I think that, you know, he might do all right. That's it, I think. So we've got the Premiership semi-finals this week. Whoever get to play Exeter at Sandy Park for a dry reaming. And then Wasps at home to either Bristol or Sale, I guess, isn't it? It's Bristol or Sale it.
I'll be there.
Are you going to be at the Rico, are you, this weekend?
I'm going to be at the Rico for the rugby, and then I'll be at the Rico for the darts later that evening.
Well, stay away from the Sale players, mate.
Just call it double bubble.
Oh, Matt, double bubble. Videographer on double time. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Got any jobs going?
You could have had one.
When?
We offered you a job when we came down to Newquay for that Pirates game.
I'm not entirely sure that happened, but we might have to discuss that offline.
No one wants to see Russ lay a cable.
Certainly not in the moment.
It comes out like Tagliatelle, the sign of him, doesn't it?
And then the week after that is the the European finals are the week after that, aren't they? And you know, apparently Racing have got loads of general COVID as well, and that's finals going to be at Ashton Gate. Do you work on any of the European rugby, Doug?
I will not be, no,
because that's at Ashton Gate, isn't it? The European final,
yeah.
So which, you know, probably suits Exeter down to the ground, 60 miles at the M5.
The first European final in years that's really easy for us to get to and no one could go and watch it.
I know, yeah. Oh, the irony. Right, let's get out of here. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's not been anywhere near as bad as I was expecting it to be. So, although that may be a matter of opinion by the time you've got this far. Thanks for listening. We'll be back at some point. But yeah, it's been a pleasure. Go well.
Podcast Network.